Hey, today is Wednesday, March 22nd. This is the women's chumash here. We're in the middle of Bereishit Perek Yud Gimel.
Hey, Rabotai. We are in the middle, coming towards the end of Perek Yud Gimel. Lot and Avram have separated. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Avram, and we will analyze the content of that vision or dialogue that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has within Avram. So we will begin just again on Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalid. Vashem Amar El Avram, Acharehi Pared Lot Me'imo. We commented on that as well. Sana einecha urei min hamakom asherat hasham. Lift your eyes, take a look from the place that you are standing at currently. Tzafot na v'negba v'kedma v'yama. North, south, east and west. Kichol haaretz asherat haro'eh l'cha etnena. Any land which you can see, I am going to give to you. Ulizaracha ad olam, and to your children as a permanent inheritance. Visamti et zaracha ka'afar haaretz, I will enable your children to be like the dirt, like the afar, like the granules of the earth. Asher im yuchal ish limnot et afar haaretz, should there be a human being who is capable of counting, of identifying the number of granules of sand or dirt on this earth, gam zaracha imane, such a person will be able to count your children as well. Since there is no such person on this planet, nobody on this planet will be able to accurately count your children. Kum hitalech ba'aretz, I want you to travel across the land, le'arka ulurachpa, lengthwise and widthwise. Ki lecha etnena, because I'm going to give you the land. Vaye'ehal Avram vayavo vayeisha be'eloni mamrei asher b'chevron. Avram pitched his tent near Eloni Mamrei, which is in Chevron. Vayivin sham mizbeach l'Hashem, and he built a mizbeach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the end of the unit. So what I'd like to focus on is something that Rishonim, Parshanim, and Midrash focused on. There seems to be two conflicting methods as to how HaKadosh Baruch Hu plans to award this land unto Avram. The first couple of psukim stated what? What need Avram do? What? Just look. Pick your eyes up and look. And whatever you see, I will now give to you. Then, two psukim later, he says, no. Kum hitalech ba'aretz la'arka ulurachba ki lecha etnena. Well, which one is it? In other words, I'm going to frame it in a halachic legal category. A legal category. Okay? If I want to buy your house, of course I'm going to get overcharged, there's no doubt. But if I want to buy your house, what mechanism must I do to demonstrate that there is an agreement of mind between buyer and seller and that neither of us can withdraw nor change the price? What do we call that one single halachic word? What? No. That might be an example. What's the overall... A kinyan, exactly. A kinyan in halachic terminology is a symbolic act that demonstrates that two people have agreed to do X, Y, and Z, and beyond that point, you can't withdraw. So the Mishnah in Maseches Kiddushin, which is the first parak of Kiddushin, is all of kinyanim. How do you go about acquiring anything? What?
Rebbe at my wedding brought me a handkerchief.
Well, that right. Well, that's called a kinyan. Right. That's a kinyan sudar. That we use the handkerchief as a frequent one. But I'm going to give you the first basic rule. There are three ways in order to acquire property. One.
Walk the perimeter.
No, that might not be. That's why I'm not saying it yet. The first one is to give a down payment. Kesef. So if your house is going to be sold for $1 million, I pay you $2 as a down payment. That's it. You pick up the $2, the land is now mine. You can't change your mind. I can't change your mind. I can't change your mind. You can't change your mind. And we cannot change the price any longer. That's kesef, a down payment. Of course, I still have to pay you the rest of the $1 million. There's no doubt. But the formal act of acquisition doesn't even need $2. A pruta is the smallest coin through which a legal... It's about a dime. Some say it's a quarter. It's a quarter. So if you will authorize me to sell your chametz, the Gentile who will purchase our chametz, your chametz and my chametz, will give me a down payment of 25 cents for every single family's chametz who she will be buying. And the balance is extended to her in the form of a loan, which she is obligated to pay off in 9 days. That's the way it works. But it's kinyan kesef. Kinyan kesef. Now, the second way is to write a document, a shtar. So you don't exchange any money whatsoever, but you write a document. I buy your house. And that's it. And it'll say the price as well. Two witnesses sign the document, transfer it to the buyer. Buyer now owns it. The deal is done. Then there is a third way, is called chazaka. Chazaka. Chazaka means engaging in a demonstrative way that I indeed am the new owner of this property. Demonstrative way.
Without being contradicted? Is that part of it? In other words, if you...
No, that's all of the Daf Yomi today.
Kick you out.
No, that's the whole Daf Yomi now from Bava Basra. After I'll just answer your question in a second. So what can I do? I change the locks. I put up a fence around the property. Those are activities that are typically reserved for the owner of the property. I don't change your locks. And you don't put up fences around my property. So the act of engaging, and it's a broad sweeping category of types of activity. There's a whole 20 block in the Gemara. Does this count? Does this count? I'm giving you the simple basic. An act, a physical act to the property that demonstrates ownership. Now, just to answer your question for a second. If I were to go to Elizabeth, well, I have no idea, but if I were to go to Elizabeth, we have a Dunkin' Donuts here, and we don't have to run to Elizabeth. That's kosher. So you might as well move to Teaneck. So if I were to go to your house and put a fence around it, that would not necessarily grant me ownership. Why? Because you can come and say, hey, buddy, what are you doing here? This is my house. So the third parak of a Baba Basra, which is currently the Daf Yomi, says that I, the landowner, claiming I have to hold on to the deed for 3 years. I have to hold on to the deed that I bought the property for 3 years. If I only had it for 2 years and it was known that it was your house before I bought it, Bet Din will tell me, take a hike. This is not your house. You stole it from her. You went and put up a fence around the property when it wasn't hers, when it wasn't yours. So, chazaka is an action that demonstrates ownership, but it does not preclude the original owner from saying, "Hey, what's going on here? You put up a fence around the park, you changed the locks and decided to make it your house." So you have to hold on to your to the deed for 3 years. After 3 years, I can take the deed, throw it in the garbage can, and when you come to Beis Din and say, "This is my house," Beis Din will say, "No, it's not. It's Adler's house. He bought it. Because he's been living there for 3 years and you never opened up your mouth. Should have said something before that." But the way the acquisition takes place is chazaka. Chazaka. That's what the Mishnah tells us. The Mishnah also tells us, the Gemara actually tells us, that if there are business practices in a locale that do not match the Mishnah's three, or for example, if I want to buy this tape recorder from you, what's the only legal way that I can purchase this so that it becomes mine? We can't change our minds and can't change the price. What's the only thing I got to do?
Kesef.
No! Kesef does not work for anything that moves. I have to pick it up. I have to make hagbah. You give it to me, I pick it up for the purpose of making a kinyan. I got to pay you the value of this, the $10, whatever it is. But the signal as to when anything that is movable is now mine by picking it up. If it's an animal, which the Gemara speaks of frequently, they don't expect you to pick up a donkey. You move it, meshicha. You take the reins and you pull it. The owner gives it to you, you pull it towards you, that's the king. But the Gemara also speaks about normal business practices. So I ask you, ladies, you're selling your house. You finally come to an agreement with a buyer. I don't think he's going to change the locks in the next 2 minutes. I don't know if you're going to have a sofer to write a document. There might be an exchange of down payment. But what is the standard business practice in the United States that a deal has been completed? You shake your hands. Exactly. That's called Situmta. Samach Yud. Tet Vav Mem Tav Aleph. Situmta means local business practices. And the halacha honors local business practices. So if two witnesses will say they shook on the deal after they agreed on the million, the land has transferred ownership, and that's it. No doubt about it. No doubt. The most famous business practice in our community is the diamond dealer, Mazel Brach. You want to buy a ring? Every Gentile on 47th Street knows those two words. You want to buy a ring and you want to consummate the deal? You say, the buyer tells the seller, the diamond dealer, Mazel Brach. That means we just agreed upon the price, $2,500. You can't change your mind. The buyer says it. The seller has to agree to it. If the buyer says it and the seller says okay, that's it. The ring is now yours for the price that you negotiated. Neither of you can change. So, walking around a property is not necessarily one of the three methods of demonstrating ownership. Because people can walk around all over the place. Certainly looking at a property is certainly not considered a legal kinyan. Certainly. Maybe walking around might be. So the first thing that I want to deal with is how Rishonim analyze the legal acquisition of Eretz Yisrael to Avram and his children from a halachic standpoint based on the two psukim that are stated. Namely, one, God told him to take a look at it. Number two, God. And while we're at it, we're going to compare another situation where God tells somebody to take a look at something. Who did he tell to look?
Moshe.
What might be the difference between Avraham's gaze and Moshe's gaze? We will take a look at that as well. So, please take a look. Let's start with In this case, we don't have to start with Rashi, because Rashi doesn't say anything. The assumption would be, according to Rashi, that the opportunity to look at something was just a nice little gesture on God's part, but the actual acquisition was the fact that he walked the perimeter of the boundaries from Le'orka Ulurachba. Now the Medrash says he had Kfitzas Haderech, because that's a very long walk. It's 400 miles by 400 miles. That's a long walk for an elderly man to do this. What? It never said that he did it. That's another point. Never says that he did it. So let's see number one, the Ramban. So it's on page number one, on the right hand side of the page. The Ramban makes his suggestion. Kum hitaleich ba'aretz, says the Ramban. Yitachein, this is a possibility. Shezeh reshut kirtzono. Maze reshut kirtzono. If he wants to. If he wants to walk around, let him go walk around. Reshut kirtzono. Omar lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Bechol asher tirtzeh lo lechet ba'aretz lecha. Any place that you happen to walk, to decide to walk to, that will be yours. Had Moshe known about oil in Saudi Arabia, he might have gone in a different direction. He might have. But what is there no, according to the Ramban, what does the phrase kum not mean? It's not a tzivu. It's not a commandment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you walk around. And let's assume that Avram decided to be the lazy one and not walk any place. Any place. Based on that line, would Avram acquire anything in Eretz Yisrael? Nothing. Because God said, whatever you do, that's what will happen. Lecha yihyeh. I'm not telling you to do it, but if you want to do it, if you want this to become yours, what do you have to do? Yeah, cool. Just give me 2 seconds. I want to finish the Ramban. Why? Ki eheye imach ushmarticha me'ra'at hagoyim. I, God, will be with you and protect you. And what will happen when I walk on your territory, 1317 Hudson Road? I start walking around. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to protect me. And Debbie Teich has nothing to worry about. She has a lot to worry about, because this is going to become my house. But I will be protected. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is promising Avram. Ki eheye imcha ushmarticha meira'at hagoyim. From the evil intentions of the Gentile, who sees you walking on his or her property, and doing what? And saying, what are you doing? What's this to do? What are you doing here? You don't have to worry about it. I'll take care of it. Ki lecha eknena. Because I'm going to give you the land. Ki lomar shelecha tihiye.
It will be.
Ah.
Not because it can't be passed.
Says the Ramban. This is a nice little suggestion on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's part to Avram. But even if he doesn't, it will be the exact same thing whether he does or he doesn't. The land is not going to be his right now. When will it be his? Eventually. Later on, in the next part of Parshat Lech Lecha, we will learn that it will be Dor Rivi'i Yashuvu Heina Ki Lo Shalem Avon Ha'emori. God will explain to Avram, why will I not legally transfer the land to you now? Because the transgression of the Emori, symbolic of all of the nations of the seven, has not yet been complete. In other words, Ramban's theory is, Ich bin dachte Rabbi Yisrael, And I could take away anybody's territory the way Rashi presents it at the very beginning in the name of his father. Amar Rabbi Yitzchaki. Rashi's Rabbi Shmuel ben Yitzchak. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Why does the Torah start with Bereishis Bara Elohim? Why doesn't the Torah start with Shmot chapter 12, which is the first mitzvah, HaChodesh HaZelachem? So what does Rashi answer? Because the nations of the world are going to complain that we are taking their land. We're thieves. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is laying the groundwork. You're not thieves, I own it. So up until now, why? I let you have it, and now I want to... That's not the way the Ramban looks at it. In order for something, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have what? Taken the land, there has got to be a legitimate reason why he took the land away from the Canaanite and the Chiti and the Amori and the Aprizi. And at Avram's time, it's Lo Shalem Avon HaEmori. In my book upstairs, the Amorite people have not yet deserved to be have their land forfeited. They don't. I don't know why. Nobody knows HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbon. But what good deed did the Amori people do? We don't know. But it's Lo Shalem. And God tells them, Dor Rivi'i Yashuvu Hena. It's only four generations from here who will actually return. V'im, hold on, just I'll take your questions in an hour, don't worry. V'im hi mitzvah shiyelech ba, if you would like to be somewhat difficult and not accept my suggestion that kum hitalech ba'aret is an option, a suggestion, but not a command. But if you don't want to listen to it, you want to suggest, v'im hi mitzvah shiyelech ba kol orka v'rach ba, in order to what? Take hold of the gift. To take hold of the gift. Because if I give you my phone as a gift, and what do you not do? You didn't pick it up. It's still mine. I can say from today till tomorrow, I'm giving you this gift, but it's not yours. Because what didn't you do? Didn't make a kinyan. Remember those words. Didn't make a kinyan. Kasha Pirashti, but lo nitztave la'asot zeh miyat. Avram was not told today by a Kodesh Baruch, hey, get on your donkey and start walking all over it. He didn't. V'hine asake ki ata haya b'mizrach. Right now he was in the east. V'achakach halach al eretz pelishtim shehu b'marav. Vehu kiyem hamitzvah b'chaya. During the course of his entire lifetime, Avram managed to fulfill the commandment of kum hitalech ba'aretz orka l'rachba. But the Ramban is not caving in on his original, on his second point, that walking around is not a king. To whom will Eretz Yisrael be given? Children. And they're going to have to wage war. The war will take 7 years. And then the division will take 7 more years. 14 years from the time Yeshua stepped into Israel is when the Jews established control. So the Ramban says you can have one of two choices. Either God's giving him a nice little suggestion for a tour for the rest of his life, or touring, go watch, see what's doing. Or it's a mitzvah. But there's no mitzvah to do so now. He did it during the course of his lifetime, but it does not serve as a kinyan, because nowhere do we see, at least explicitly, that just walking around somebody's property grants you acquisition.
That's why you paid Ephron, because the Bible actually didn't.
Okay, so the Ephron situation is, that's correct. That is going to be said by the Ramban in Chayisara. Why did Avram pay 400 shekel over la socher? Why? Because he wanted to own it. And having promises by God to people who don't believe in God is not going to be much of a compelling excuse to keep the land. But when you pay 400 silver pieces, that's kesef. Kesef works for... in fact, the Gemara in Kedushin says... Kinyan Kesef works We learn it out from where? Hasadeh Ashekana Abraham. From the acquisition of Maraka Machpelah, that's where we learn that King and Kesef is a legal acquisition for Karka. That's what we learn. Question. Okay, there, what you're saying is touching upon an extremely significant halachic issue, and the answer is right here. When God says, I'm going to give to you, Abraham, this land, whatever you can see, whatever that means that God has identified this land as Eretz Yisrael, the land of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, despite the fact that we don't own it as yet. And I'm going to give you the clear halakhic case to illustrate. It's an excellent question. Let me ask you this. Do you think Abraham was obligated to be Makrish, Tumas, and Maishras? Do you think you have to observe Shemitah? Okay, that's that. Okay, that's the correct answer. That's the correct answer. But let's even say after Matan Torah, and there were Jews who decided to leave the camp, and they went to Eretz Yisrael, and somehow God let them live. Would they have to be on Shumas and Maishas? The answer is no, because we didn't own it yet. However, listen very carefully. All obligations which are related to the ground, which we call mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz, mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz, such as shmitah, yovel, truma, ma'aser, peah, leket, shikha, all agricultural halachot, no Jew was chayav to observe that until the conquest of Israel was legally completed, 14 years after Yoshua went in. However, the fact that the land was called Eretz Yisrael and destined to be what? Jewish land, that starts with this, with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And I will give you a halakha to prove it. Halakha to prove it. I know it's a little off topic, but it's an important halakha. Sunday was the Chag HaSmicha at YU. Chag HaSmicha. So let's talk about the real Smicha. The real Smicha, not today's fakery, the real Smicha is that you have to get Smicha from someone who got Smicha dated back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That Smicha has not been in effect for 1800 years, since the end of the Tannaitic era. The reason why it's not in effect? Because the Romans threatened anybody grants smicha is going to be killed. Both the masmich and the sarach. So there was no such thing as smicha.
So the chain was broken.
Chain was broken. No Amoraic sage had smicha. Not one. The Tanaim did. And that's why a Tana is always called Rabbi. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Tarfon. Amoraic sages are not called Rabbi. They are called either Rav, or by their name. Because they didn't have smicha. Just one second. I'm not clear. Hello? Yes.
None of the Amoraic sages, they're called Rav.
Like a rabbi today. You're a rabbi. Because there was no smicha.
Okay.
But now here comes the proof to the kid. How much smaller was Eretz Yisrael during the Second Temple days as opposed to the First Temple days? It was quite a bit smaller. Quite a bit. The land, the Jews who came from Babel after the exile were pittance in number. 43,217 Jews came back. That was it. They could not occupy all of the land. And there are halachot, which says the following. Okay, I'm going to give you a place called Beit She'an. You heard of Beit She'an? We'll debate that. Beit She'an, according to Torah law today, no chiyuv of giving trumot to masrot. Even though there are Jews living here. Why? Because since it was not legally reacquired, it doesn't have the sanctity which is related to mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. It doesn't. It doesn't have to observe shmita according to Torah law. However, now I'm going to give you the last clincher. In order to give smicha, let's say smicha with reason. Smicha can't be given in Teaneck or in Washington Heights. Smicha has to be given in Eretz Yisrael.
Because
that's what the halacha says. But you're allowed to give smicha in the Beit She'an. You know why? Because it's called Eretz Yisrael. What determined whether something is called Eretz Yisrael or not? The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham, whatever you can see, wherever you walk, that's going to be called Eretz Yisrael. So for certain halachot that are not related to the ground, mitzvot hatuliyot ba'aretz, those apply to whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham, this is Eretz Yisrael. Even though it wasn't legally his. So according to the Ramban, that's what's happening now with Avraham. Avraham is now going to survey, be like a surveyor of all of Israel. Whatever he sees or whatever he walks will now be identified as Eretz Yisrael. And now when the Jew takes it over in a legal sense, which is four generations from now, it becomes obligated in all the laws of Trumot and Masrot and so on and so forth. So what did Avram accomplish according to the Ramban? He gave us the address why we get on an El Al to visit Israel. And to go to Beit She'an, you're not in Israel? Of course you're in Israel. But it's not Israel that's Chayav and Trumot and Masrot, because when they came back from the diaspora, they didn't occupy the Beit She'an area. Not at all. Yes.
How many miles was he allowed to walk? I think he said as much as he wants. But if he sees that much, Ayin Ra'ah, that much,
okay.
So Shar Kaha.
Okay. So that's why the shir's not over yet. that's why we will see some who will try to understand what this Ayin Ra'ah means. And others say he actually walked Arba Meot Parsa, the Arba, he walked eight parts of the bottom, 400 miles by 400 miles.
Not so much.
Okay, it's plenty. Yes.
We didn't take it as a halachic paradox for a second. The Tzitzchukim, I think, suggests something else, at least to me. The first person is Sane Echorei. That's a passive kind of experience.
Yeah.
Walking, I think, is more. That's I'm actively going to do what I'm trying to do. That I want to own it, and I have to do that with my feet or with my action.
Okay.
And there's something about it, I think.
Okay. So I'm going to take that question a second. Then I want to show you the Kli Yakar, who says something incredibly powerful on the footsteps of the Ramban. Incredibly powerful on the footsteps of the Ramban. Incredibly powerful. So, who? Anybody other questions? Now go to page number 2 for a second. he's also bothered by the two steps, and on the in the left hand side where it says v'hakarov elai, what appears to me lomar b'cholzeh shehikne Avraham Hakadosh Baruch Hu Avraham et haaretz liknot shama shnei minei toelet, two different purposes. Ho'echad ruchani v'hu nikne b'ri'iya bilvad, that can be acquired simply by sight. Kisham makom mikdash shel mata, there, someplace down there, we know where it is on the Harabayit, is the house of the mikdash, michuvan, which is directly below the Beit HaMikdash Shel Ma'ala. Visham Po'el Hashem, or Po'al Hashem, Mechon L'Shivto Yitbarach. I want to elaborate just for a second. Quote to me the Pasuk, which mandates Aliyah L'Regel Shalosh Pamim Bashana. Yeira'eh Kol Zechurecha. Yeira'eh Kol Zechurecha. In other words, now, trust me that if you're standing in the Old City and you can see the Har HaBayit, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. Even though it's, you can see it, you have to make an appearance in the Har HaBayit. But what's the objective? What's the objective? To be seen, Yeira'eh, to be seen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara plays on the word Yeira'eh, that it could have been written. We don't know, and forget, no vowel sounds in the Torah. So you can read it as what? Yeira'eh. The purpose of Aliyah L'Regel is to have an encounter with the Rabban Yishalayim. You see him, and he sees you. Wow. Why? Says Kli Yakar, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Avram to what? Sa na einecha? Because I want you to see me. I want you to see the land which is now called Eretz Yisrael, and what phenomenon does Eretz Yisrael have above and beyond all other lands? Eretz Yisrael, it's a Mishnah in Kehilim, Mikudesheti Mikol HaRatzot. In what way does something become Mikudash? The presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina. Presence of the Shechina. So the first kinyan that Avram wants to make is to see the totality of what Eretz Yisrael is going to be for the purpose of Lirot. Of Lirot. Eventually it will be legislated as Shalosh Pamim Bashana, Yeira'eh Kol Zechurecha Et Panei Hashem Elokecha. But the first time that this happens, that there is some elevated spiritual experience simply by being in Yerushalayim HaKadosh. You know what I'm talking about. You don't have to do anything, you don't have to tour. You just walk on the street. You get out of your hotel, you walk on King George. You feel something. It doesn't have to be in the Old City. It can be any place. No, Tel Aviv, it's a little more difficult. I can't do that. But even in Tel Aviv, there are places where it's all Mekomot Kedoshim. And you can see the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in Tel Aviv. That's the first step. And that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them with Ri'iyah, because that defines the essence of the experience. Ri'iyah. Seeing, feeling the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now comes a second thing. The second aspect is to do what? It's to physically acquire. So, the Kli Yakar is going to quote a Gemara which says, not everyone agrees, but he accepts it, that Gaiish Ametzra, that somebody who what? Walks around, steps on the lot, makes all the boundaries. Steps on the boundaries, what is that? That's a legal source of kinyan. That's the legal source of kinyan. Dayish, it's called Dayash Ametzra. You look at the next line. Look at the next line and it'll say it. Ametzra, Metzra. So I'm continuing, you know, a couple of 6-7 lines down. Just Chol Amistakel B'Makom HaKadosh Hahu Miyad Nitlabesh Ruach Tahara V'Kedusha. When you look at a place in Israel, you are robed with sanctity and purity. Umelech Elyon B'Yofo Yitbarach Techezena Einav. He will use his eyes to what? To look at you. Uberia lechud, sagi leadam liknot hashlemot hahu b'makom hashekoralo Avraham. What did Avraham call Har Hamoria? Hashem Yeira'eh. Wow. Wow.
Or Yireh,
right? But it's Yeira'eh. If you will remember the second day of Sukkot, the Hoshanas that we recite on the second day of Hoshanas, second day of Yontif, always, unless it's Shabbos, unless the first day is Shabbos, then we do Laman Anidach Beretzayim. It's Hoshana Vahar Yeira'eh Hashana. Hoshana Vahar Yeira'eh Hoshana. So this is played itself over and over again. Over and over again. And it is one of the reasons why the Akedah is read on Rosh Hashanah. There are many reasons why we read the Akedah on Rosh Hashanah. One is to show you Akedat Yitzchak Lizaro Hayom Barachamim Tizkor, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remember us in deference to the great act of sacrifice that Avraham was willing to engage with Yitzchak. But there is another reason. Because the Yemei HaDin, beginning with Rosh Hashanah, you have an opportunity to what? Feel and experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu much more so than the rest of the year. And we all feel it. Just remember, just think of yourself when you're davening Ne'ilah. And you say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, and Hashem Hu Elohim. You actually feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu standing in front of you. That's Yeira'eh. That's the first thing. Then he uses the expression a little later that he's Dayesh Amitzre. Where does he use that expression? What? On the third line. Where's which third line? Right, Ve'echad Gufani, V'hu Nikneh Michi Dayish Amitzri. Stepping on the boundaries, walking across the boundaries, that's the physical acquisition. That's how he explains it. It's a takeoff of the Ramban, but extremely sharp. And we should appreciate it because it's a significant definition of what Eretz Yisrael represents. Yes?
I translate a lot of real estate contracts for many years. And in each one, there is a clause that says, buyer confirms that it has examined and inspected the property or had it examined or inspected by experts of its choosing. And that the property is suitable for its needs and that it is...
Yeah, we all pay for a guy to go...
It is to be accepted in as-is condition. Something like that.
Okay.
So I see this as basically God is telling Moshe, go ahead, look at it. This is what I'm giving you and your children. Now, don't go and tell me afterwards that I promised you something else. or that it's not suitable for you, or that you, you know, in some way this is a ground for mekach ta'ut. In a way, he's asking Moshe to say, look at it, walk around it if you want.
But don't tell me later, this is not what I bargained for.
Right.
Very nice. Very nice. I like that.
Yes.
You did what? Oh no, please don't say that. That is correct. I would not want the Kriyot to make such a statement public that it doesn't include Tel Aviv. Yes.
I'm going to ask this meeting.
Yes.
If there's no chain with smicha anymore,
how's it ever going to be renewed?
Or how is the Vayu legit?
It's only legit for the tradition that has been established for the last 1800 years. That if the Rebbe thinks you know where to look something up, he gives you smicha and he says you're allowed to paskin questions.
Even outside Israel.
Even outside, yes. Because it's not the real smicha. But your other question is, how are we ever going to go ahead? Mm-hmm. The Rambam asked that question. How are we ever going to renew the smicha again if it has to, if the chain's been broke for 1800 years? And the Rambam writes, as he does so often, Yeraeli. It appears to me. Whenever you see Rambam write that, it means he has no source anywhere in Talmud. Bavli, Yerushalmi, Tosefta. This is my invention. He said, if all of the Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael will agree that one person shall be recognized as the Samuch, that person can grant smicha to 70 others, and we now have a regular, full-fledged Sanhedrin. It almost happened. It happened three times in Jewish history where they tried to do it. The first time was Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. It was suggested that he become the Samuch. At the last minute, Chachmei Yerushalmi pulled out because he lived in Tzfat. And how can you have the Rosh Yeshiva living in Tzfat, not in Yerushalayim? So that was that. In the 1700s, there was a Rabbi Yaakov Barav, Rakov Beirav, who they tried to make smicha, and it didn't work. I don't remember the reason why. In 1950, Rav Maimon, who was a signatory to the Declaration of Independence of Medinat Yisrael, and an outstanding Mizrahi leader, made a proposal that we should, let's take this vote. All the Rabbanim of Eretz Yisrael will have a panel list, vote for the number one guy, reinstitute the Sanhedrin. And the Brisker Rav, Reb Chaim's son, the Rav's uncle, said, we're not participating in this. He was against it. I can't understand why, but he didn't, and that was the end of it. It's actually very difficult to get one person. It needs a person of stature, of enormous stature. I could have imagined, for example, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that Ovadia Yosef might be that person. Might, but he was a Sephardi, so many of the Ashkenazim might not. Or Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, or Rav Moshe Feinstein, son of the Rav, forget, no one would have voted for him because he went to college. But Rav Moshe Feinstein, or someone like that, had a chance of becoming voted, doesn't have to be unanimous, but that somebody should emerge, or the Chazon Ish, somebody. And then we would have we'd be able in a position to resolve every halachic issue, right? No more 2 days yontif, thank God. Lots of things that we can take care of, but it never happened. But that's how the Rambam writes. Yera Eli, that's the way we'll do it. So it's don't spend too many hours awake that it's going
to
happen.
Would be able to vote? Is that why?
What?
Because the Sanhedrin would be able to.
To vote on any issue. Correct. Handle any issue and vote any issue. Exactly. Resolve it. And there would be a unified practice of Klal Yisrael. everybody would either be eating kitniot or no one would be eating kitniot. It's not going to be different chilukim minhagim anymore. The Sanhedrin would resolve every single halachic issue, and it would be pe'echad b'dibur echad. Unbelievable.
But wouldn't there always be some sect, some group that won't listen to the Sanhedrin?
So we know what happens to when you disagree with the Sanhedrin. You get executed. Especially if you remember the Sanhedrin. If you remember the Sanhedrin, you disagree, you get executed. That's called a Zaken Mamre. I don't know. I'm hoping that we do go back to that system. But it has dangers, very big dangers. Which are that Bezin's going to enforce the punishments that the Torah suggests for violating laws. You're a Michal Shabbos b'Fahesya, you're going to get stoned. That's not going to be easy. It's going to be a lot of coerced religion. Okay, I have to stop a minute early. I'm sorry. We'll continue next to Bach.